listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM, broadcasting across Hamilton from the edge of the Niagara Escarpment.
Friends, thanks for spending time with me again tonight, and welcome back. I hope you've had a great Tuesday. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air. And tonight I'm hanging out with Jan Simon. He's an indie pop singer-songwriter and composer based in Toronto. You can find Jan on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Bandcamp, his website, and all streaming services as Jan Simon. So, hey, Jan, thanks so much for talking to me tonight.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, of course, anytime. I guess, just to kind of start everything off and to kind of introduce yourself, how would you describe your sound and style?
I would describe it as if a theater kid just, you know, took a go at pop music and really, you know, let all the drama sort of unfold. I definitely sort of have been driven by theater and performance and being on stage. This has sort of been my whole life. And so my music, I think, is definitely, even though I didn't deliberately, I sort of, when I listen to it now, I can definitely hear the theater kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who are your biggest musical influences?
Oh, that would have to be, so if I were to pick three, I would say ABBA, for sure, then Lady Gaga, and Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were, all three of them sort of represent different sort of corners, if you will, of sort of the pop rock world. All three of them have sort of been accompanying me in different phases of my life. And I look up to all three groups and musicians. So definitely those three.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel like you take away from each of those artists?
Well, let's start with ABBA. ABBA is, this group has been in my life since I was a little kid. My dad was really obsessed with them, and he had all the records, and he had all of their songs on the family computer, and he downloaded them all for me and with the lyrics and everything. So ABBA is definitely the biggest connection to childhood for me. And so whenever I listen to, their songs are classic at this point. And what I appreciate most about them is their just impeccable sense of harmonies. They sort of do it like no one else does. It's just such beautiful, pleasing melodies and perfectly harmonious voices. Something that I've always really loved and appreciated. With Gaga, she has been sort of in my life since I was 14. That's when I discovered her, which was around 2010. She, just before her sort of huge, sort of big explosion onto the music scene. And I was very sort of impressionable then, and I didn't really have an idol. A musical idol. I sort of listened to a lot of different things, but when I heard Gaga, specifically Bad Romance, I was just immediately hooked onto everything from the way she sings, to her lyrics, to her outfits, to the videos. And Gaga, for me, opened up this world of being creative in music and being allowing yourself to be different. So she reminds me, but she Yeah, she represents, you know, this time of in my life. Obviously, I wasn't out when I discovered her.
Mm-hmm.
I was 14. I wasn't out then, but she certainly helped me find this sort of sense of who I was inside, and she definitely helped me love myself. And her music is just probably, you know, if you go into my phone, like I would say, like good 70% of the music on there is Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
So Gaga is my number one.
Awesome.
And as for Elton, Elton has been sort of, you know, present in my life as well from a very young age, but never to not to the degree that he is now.
Sure.
Sort of in the past year, I've really gotten into him, and I just, you know, he has tens of albums, so there's a lot of unearthing there that needed to be done.
Yeah.
And Elton, obviously, you know, so I play the piano, and Elton is obviously a pianist, so I look up to him, and he's also, you know, an unquestionable gay icon. So everything, you know, from his style to his the versatility of you know, of his piano playing, it's just you know, I hope to live up to at least a percentage of what he has created.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you listened to as a kid? And what has changed since then? And do you think that those early influences have an impact on your current style?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yes, I do actually remember very well what I listened to when I was a kid. So I never really, again, up until the age of 14, I didn't really have one artist that I was really obsessed with.
Mm.
Or, you know, I was really just influenced by what my parents were listening to. And that included a lot of Russian pop, since my family is from the Soviet Union. So growing up on day trips and road trips, I would have my my Walkman, and I would listen to a lot of Russian pop, Russian singer-songwriters. And yeah, I think that's really mostly what I was listening to. The extent to which it shaped my musical style now, I would be hard. It's hard to say. Although, you know, Russian pop tends to be also a little over the top sometimes and a little dramatic. So I think, you know, I never really made the connection whether the theater in my music it comes from there. But it's an interesting thought that, you know, somewhere subconsciously it does.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I remember one of the singers that I listened to quite a lot growing up. Again, she is Russian, so you may not have heard of her. Her name is Zhanna Guzarova.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that a lot of Russian media outlets compared her to Lady Gaga. And that would be obviously later when Lady Gaga actually became famous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny that I was always drawn to this sort of over-the-top female figure that was not afraid to be different. That was, and by being different, I mean like not just dress weird, but also sing in a very, very recognizable, very particular way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, from the timbre of her voice, the way she enunciates, like those were all the reasons that I fell in love with Gaga as well. And that's what I also love about this kind of passionate, you know, theater-driven music creation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. When do you remember when you had that first sort of aha music moment where you discovered an album or a song and you thought, wow, I want to create that?
To be honest, I don't know if a specific album or a song or an artist made me want to go into music, but I do remember there was this moment where, so I was in a lot of choirs growing up,
mm-hmm.
and there was a specific moment, I think I was 9 years old, and I signed up to this big choir, there were like 200 kids there, but in the very early sessions, we were having these sort of, we were in smaller groups, and they were teaching us harmonies. There was, you know, the choir master, she was at the piano, and she played this melody of the song that everyone knew, but then she went ahead and apart into five different parts. And, you know, these kids sing this part, these kids sing this part, and so on. And it was just so mind-blowing to me. I had never thought about it for some reason that, you know, two people can sing different melodies that actually work together.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this very, very clearly, very acutely, how I came home that day and I said, wow, like, it was just so beautiful to me, and I can't wait to just, like, do this over and over. And literally from that moment on, and all the way to this day, one of my favorite things to do is to harmonize. Like, I'll actually, like, I'll be in my car and I'll be blasting my music, and I won't even be singing along with the song most of the time. I'll be harmonizing.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so I think it's this kind of naive, not naive, but, like, the sort of innocent discovery of harmonies for me, which is also one of the reasons I love ABBA so much, because they just get it so, so right and so clean. That was a moment that I knew, like, I don't think I enjoy anything more than I enjoy this, singing, and singing along with someone and creating these beautiful things with their voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I believe that you're a vocalist, but you also play at least one instrument. What instruments do you play?
Yes, I do play the piano.
Mm-hmm.
I've been studying piano since the age of six, formally.
Mm-hmm.
That's when my parents signed me up to piano school. Prior to that, it was my mom who taught me piano. I think she set me down, I think, at the age of five. And from five to six, she just taught me the basics. And then she sent me off to school. That I had formal classical piano education and musical theory and musical history. So, yeah, the whole package.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when I was 16, my parents got me a guitar in hopes that I would pick it up. But me being the spoiled piano player that I am, with the delicate fingers that I have, I have yet to pick up guitar.
Mm.
But that is one of my goals.
Yeah.
To pick up guitar as well, and sort of force myself to go through the calluses, you know, the calluses on your fingers that you get from playing a string instrument.
For sure,
That's unfortunately what stopped me.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, piano came first for you. When did you discover singing?
Well, singing would be probably when I got into the choirs.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did a total of three different choirs when I was growing up through elementary and middle school. Although I think, you know, the whole reason that I signed up to choirs is because my parents knew that I was always singing along to something. It was just once you pick up an instrument, singing along just sort of comes naturally. And my family has always been very musical. And by that I mean, you know, they're all engineers, but they're very much into music. So music was always playing in my house. So I guess I'm the first one in the family that actually, you know, decided to take that musical love and actually make that into my main thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. That was actually very, very not long ago.
Mm.
So I actually went to university for something completely opposite. I did a double major in biology and kinesiology. And I think around second or third year, I joined a Vaughan-based theater group, theater youth group. And we put up original plays, and, you know, it sort of nourished my love for theater as well. But then in 2017, the director of the group came to me and said that he's actually writing a musical. And, you know, he knows that I play the piano, and he knows that music is sort of in my blood. And he offered me to write the soundtrack.
Mm, awesome.
And it was it was very scary. It was like, what, you trust me to do this?
Yeah.
I've never done anything like this before.
Yeah.
I have written songs. Like, at this point, I was in university, but I sort of started writing songs in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But never to the extent of, like, writing for something, much less, you know, it being performed and all of that. So I took that project on, and I wrote, I think, an 11-song soundtrack. And it was mind-blowing, because, you know, you have a script, and then, you know, they tell you, he told me like where in the script the song should go and like what it should be about, and I felt so, you know, it was just so invigorating. Like I would literally like come home from I don't know, a cell biology lecture, and then I would sit down at the piano, open the script, and like start writing things, start writing songs. And those songs would then be performed, you know, by this whole cast, including myself. I was on the cast as well. And it was probably like, it was so life changing for me. And it was this event really that inspired me to go, you know what, maybe I should, you know, maybe songwriting is something I'm actually good at enough to like try this, you know, on my own and try to take some of those songs that I already wrote and write some new ones and actually put them out. And that's how it all began.
So you mentioned that you spent years in piano lessons that your parents put you into. What do you think was the most important lesson that you took away from those lessons?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one because, you know, when I think about that time, all I think about really, but the most stark memory is my teacher, who I just have nothing but love and adoration for. She was just, she was old enough to be my grandma, so I wouldn't say she's like my second mom, but she was old, definitely like a second grandma.
Yeah.
She was this, she was just fabulous, for lack of a better word. Like she was just, I don't know, she had all this jewelry on and long nails and beautiful hair and like makeup, and it was just, she was always glowing, and she, you know, for a young gay boy, she was like so inspiring, so just fabulous. But you know, she wasn't just that. She was an incredible musician, and she could, you know, she would open any sort of book of piano sheet music, and it could be like anything from Rachmaninoff to Chopin, and she would just, you know, oh yeah, you know, we're gonna learn this piece now, and let me just quickly play it for you, and then boom, she just plays it without even barely looking at the book itself. But she was immensely talented. And,
cool.
You know, and I think the biggest thing that I took from her and from these lessons is just love for music. I know it sounds cheesy, but truly when you get to go through piano lessons with a person who is so passionate and kind, and I can't overemphasize this enough, of child, how kind she was. She really just fostered this deep respect and love towards music and towards yourself as a musician, as a person who has the power and responsibility to, you know, take a piece and make it your own and perform it and feel it and, you know, let it transform you and all of those things that, again, sound cheesy, but genuinely that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it doesn't sound cheesy. It sounds really sweet.
Yeah. Very genuine. Yeah, I agree.
How did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
Well, friends, they're all very supportive, and family is very supportive now. I think in the beginning, it was just a little bit of a, you know, there was a little bit of resistance, of course, as I bet with all musicians are. So as is the case with all people who just randomly decide to not go in the science direction that they were going in, and all of a sudden say, you know, I'm actually gonna try to make this happen.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I did. Like I graduated university and I spent a few months just working as a personal trainer, and then I decided, you know, if I don't give this a shot, and by this I mean music, if I don't give this a shot right now, I'm going to find myself in 10 years, you know, working whatever, you know, job I'm working and, you know, regretting it. So I decided to, you know, put all of my resources and time into it. And I still continued to work all throughout the process of recording music. And there was a little bit of resistance, but honestly, it's just sort of, you have to have resistance. It has benefits because it allows you to keep yourself in check, and it certainly helped me, you know, not do all sorts of reckless decisions. So yeah, there was some resistance, but honestly, at this point, I think I've proven to to all the people that had hesitations, including myself, that, you know, this is something that I'm willing to work very hard for. And this is something that I believe is that I'm meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I'm really good at, and something that just brings me happiness and fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the most important thing at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the first time that you performed solo?
Yes. Yes. Very well. I mean, I sort of don't count the piano recitals in school. I don't count them because, well, for obvious reasons, it was not, like, it's not that I did anything, performed anything original, but the very first performance that I did was at this bar and church in Lovely, and it was for Hanukkah, and it was like a university-affiliated event, and I was invited by a friend who wanted to gather specifically 8 queer artists, and there were drag queens there as well, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to, this was December 2019, so you know, 3 months before the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to perform 2 of my original songs, and it was exciting, it was scary, but it was my first time, and I got paid for that event, which was so amazing and incredible, and I still
awesome.
I kept that check, and I still have that check.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that sometime in the future I get to frame it.
Mm-hmm.
when I sort of made it, and I'll look back on this check and think this was my first paid gig.
Yeah, I love that idea. That's great.
Yeah.
What are the major ways your music has changed since you first started writing?
So that's a very good question. I don't think my songwriting style has changed, or sorry, the songwriting process itself has changed, or style. I still write about the same things. I still sort of write about whatever's happening in my life and whatever is, whatever I'm passionate about. All of my songs are personal in that way. But if something has changed, that would be the direction of the musical production.
Mm-hmm.
With my first project, which was a 9-track album called Are There Any Rules, I think overall the mood of the album is very sort of angsty and a little bit gloomy and a little bit dark. And yes, the subject matter was, you know, also very personal and dark and even tragic at times, but now I'm much more inspired by, you know, taking the same subject matter, but producing it in a way that makes somebody, you know, want to get up and dance. And I don't produce my music by myself. I work with a Toronto producer whose name is Dima Cristiani, and he has a lot of tools in his toolkit. And so it's very, very much a brainstorming project when I bring a song to him, you know, with melody and lyrics already complete, and we sort of sit there and we think, okay, where do we want to take this?
Mm-hmm.
So with my latest release, which is a single called Hero, you know, the subject matter is quite, could be argued that it was, that it's quite, you know, sad and maybe melancholic, and it definitely sounded that way when I just had it on the piano as an acoustic piano version. But over the course of, I think, 9 or 10 studio sessions, which is how long it took us to make it, it transformed into this thumping, almost dancey synth pop record that is, you know, very powerful and makes you want to get up and dance and jump. And even I have friends and family say that it sounds like a workout song, which is good. Like it makes you want to get up and move, and it has this energy in it. So I'm so inspired by that now. And I think while I don't think I'm going to do an album anytime soon, I'm now focusing on singles. This kind of approach to music, that has a transformative effect on the lyrics, that's what I'm most inspired by now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a Jan Simon single. He actually just spoke about it a minute ago. Hero is Jan's single from a few weeks ago about demanding what you deserve in a relationship.
Thank you. nothing but thunder and lightning. The play begins as you pick up your pen and you cast me into your illusion. Like all good things, still on a Sunday, nothing but deafening silence. It's creeping in through the cracks of my trust, of my love, and I'm losing my balance. Like all good things, can you be another? Can you become what I need? I will be your lover. Will you be here when I believe? Nothing but every promise you ever made to me, dying of hunger because you don't know how to fix things. You'd rather leave. Can you be another? Can you become? Scars, they are diamonds in the rough.
Just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Toronto-based indie pop singer, songwriter, and composer Jan Simon. So we actually just got back from playing your latest release, Hero. I know the single has an important story. Can you share that a bit with us?
Yes. Thank you, first of all, for playing it.
Yeah.
I really love the song, and I really love sort of the vibe and the energy that it carries. The song is about sort of moving on from a breakup, but also looking on to sort of the next person that comes into your life and basically saying, you know, are you able to fill that void you know, that the previous person left.
Mm-hmm.
But in its core, you know, the song is called Hero, and it's about, I think it's really well summed up in the bridge lyric where I say, I don't need somebody to be a hero, just a man of his word would be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that line is all about a conversation that I had with my ex just before we broke up. And that was, the conversation went something along the lines of me, you know, expressing something that I wasn't happy with and sort of asking for a little bit of a change and know how important it is to be communicative in relationships and sort of express what you want and express what you need. So that's what I was feeling that I was doing. And, you know, in response, that person said, well, I can't be a superhero, Jan. And, you know, that sort of made me feel like, you know, I don't think I'm asking for that much. I don't think I'm asking you to be a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's, you know, it kind of sucks that you're making me feel like that being with me requires you to, you know, it's like an act of heroism to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
All I really need is just honesty and for you to be a man of your word.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the idea that, the event that sparked the idea for the song. All of my, every single one of my songs is inspired by an event or something that someone said or a person that really all of my songs are personal. And yet, you know, even though this song sort of came from this negative event, I listen to it now and all I hear is the energy and the power and, mm-hmm. and the celebration of sort of standing up for yourself and then taking something negative, but dressing it and decorating it in these beautiful synth sounds and a beat that makes you want to move. And that's, it's a great song and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Who did you work with to record and produce that single?
So I worked with Dima Graziani. He is a Toronto-based producer and musician.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with him on my album as well. And yeah.
Awesome. How was that process?
It's always great to work with Dima.
Mm-hmm.
He's very supportive, first of all. So, and by that I mean, you know, the way it works is I bring a song to him. Usually it's completely finished with lyrics and melody. And he always makes sure to put my vision first.
Mm-hmm.
The conversations right before we start producing, he always asks me for, you know, what the song is about. Like, he has the lyrics, but he always makes sure to ask me, yeah, what is the song about? Like, how do you hear it? What are the musical influences that you would want to sort of put into this track? It reminds me of in 2019, which is when I started working on my album, and I worked with him, and the album has 9 songs, and it, you know, every song takes a month to work on, so all in all, I think the album took just under a year to make. And at that time, I was working long shifts at this gym, and going to the studio, to Dima's studio, was literally the highlight of my day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally. Like, we had like 3 to 4 hour sessions, not every day, it would be like 2 to 3 times a week. And genuinely, like, that was what I looked forward to the most, because it was just 3 hours of us in that room and the music you know, choosing the instruments and the beats I don't know. It's just such a beautiful creation process, and it feels so real and so organic and so natural. I wouldn't really trade it for anything. And I know I'm like rambling on, but it's just thinking about it. I miss it, and I already have another song that I'm ready to start working on with them. It's just a matter of finding the time. And even thinking about it just makes me so excited, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was the reaction from, you know, family, friends, fans when you released that single? And how did you go about marketing it as an indie artist?
That's a great question. So Hero marked a sort of a departure from the first album that I released, because as I said, my first album was a little bit more gloomy, a little bit more melancholic, a little darker, whereas Hero took on this very fun twist. And also the music video that we made for it, it's very there's dancing in it, I had a professional choreographer and I had a professional videographer, and it just looks fierce, and it's just three guys dancing, and we're, there's makeup, and it's just, I'm very visibly queer and very visibly just myself and just mm-hmm. having fun to this song. So the reaction has definitely been positive, because I think I had shown a part of myself that I was afraid to show, and it is something that I say with regret, that I was afraid to show it, that it took me so long to really show that part of myself in the art that I make.
Mm-hmm.
I think, so the reaction has been, from what I've seen so far, is really nice, and I'm really happy with how it turned out, and I'm really proud of it. In terms of marketing, as an indie artist, especially during the pandemic, it can be tough. It's sort of, I'm doing everything myself from scratch, mm-hmm. with no connections, no relatives or friends in the industry. So it really is a matter of finding the right resources, and there are so many sort of agents on Instagram and Facebook and the internet as a whole that will try to sell you their services and really, for lack of a better word, like use you as a naive, beginning artist, and mm-hmm. try to, get money out of you for services that are actually not going to get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be honest, there are parts to this sort of self-marketing that are difficult, because you have to work on building your audience online, which I've been doing on Facebook and Instagram, with paid ads and trying to find the people that would, that would want to listen to my music. Like that's not as easy as I thought it would be getting into it. And then you have, the whole aspect of, okay, you've created content and you found some people to listen to it. How do you maintain their attention? How do you start reaching out to people who have an actual say in the industry, and how do you get your music in front of them? So it's like this difficult process, because there's no rule book. There's no rule book. It's not like becoming a professional in a field where you go to grad school and you finish the school and then, you know what to do next. If you know the profession that you want to do, you know what to do next. I feel like with this, there's no one way to get to sort of make it, as they say. So you're sort of running blind. Sometimes you feel like you're creating into the void, because you're not even sure if anyone's listening.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certainly a lot of problems. But for me, the main priority for me is to create, is to make the music, is to make the videos, is to share the visuals, and to work so hard that when somebody does discover it, whether it's a listener or whatever influential person in the industry, whenever they do discover it, they have a lot to go through. They have a lot of material and music to explore and to really see what I'm made of. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's been driving me for the past year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope your listeners take away from Hero?
That's a good question. What do I hope that they take away? Honestly, I think this song is it's really dedicated to people who struggle to feel accepted and loved the way they want and the way they deserve. Because I've always felt a little bit, but I've always been struggling with demanding, and obviously in an appropriate way, to be loved the way I want to be loved in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So that means standing up for yourself, and that means also knowing when it's right to demand something and when to realize that, you know, you might be unreasonable or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it, for me, it's always been a gray zone. Like I'm not sure whether I'm demanding too much or not enough, and whether this person is, you know, actually not giving me enough attention, or I just need to sort of check myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been this sort of struggle that I have inside of me, and then I realize that a lot of it is inside of me, inside my head. But at the same time, you know, look, in situations like these ones, which is the event that Hero was based on, I was very clear that, you know, this is something that I should not stand for.
For sure.
And I hope that someone that might be going through something similar realizes that there will always be another, right? So as much as a person might not want to hear this, but there will always be someone else that you can find. And, you know, for me, knock on wood, but there has been.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy now.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, not to jinx it, but I am very happy now. And I sort of hope that if there is somebody who feels like things could be better, then, you know, unless you're being completely unreasonable and doing something very toxic,
mm-hmm.
yeah, things probably could be better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm very happy to hear that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm losing it here. One second. Oh, okay. When did you and your family move to Toronto?
So I moved to Toronto with my mom in 2010, mm-hmm. which is, just in 2 weeks, we're going to celebrate our 11 year anniversary, which is crazy.
Wow. Awesome.
Time just absolutely flies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In many ways, it feels like it was yesterday. And then in many ways, it feels like we have lived here our whole lives.
I bet. Why stick around Toronto?
Oh, sorry, say that again.
Yeah, why stay around Toronto?
Why stay around Toronto?
Yeah.
Like, why did we stay here?
Yeah, or, you know, why did you choose Toronto as the city to start your music career in?
Right. So we already have family here, so that's why we moved to Toronto,
mm-hmm.
because we have family here. And I never really thought about moving out of Toronto to do music. I mean, there was a time in my life that I wanted to just, you know, pack up everything and go to New York. And, you know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. But then I really started my music in, let me say this again.
Mm-hmm.
I really started my music right before the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
So literally my first live performance was December 2019. Then I had another live performance in February of 2020. And then a month later, we're locked down. And, you know, there has never really been an option to move outside of Toronto, if that makes sense,
mm-hmm.
especially for music. And I think Toronto is a great place to be if you want to start out as a musician. I mean, right now, slowly we're seeing live music venues opening up. And by live music venues, I mean, you know, open mic nights and cafes and restaurants that allow musicians to play on their patios. And I've been very lucky and fortunate to have participated in quite a few of these little musical nights in downtown Toronto in the past month. So really, I think Toronto so far has served me very well. And I love the musicians that I share the stage with. And there's a big community here of different, really different types of entertainers. I think there's a place for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely enough room for everyone, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who are some talented local artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
So I have a few in mind.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I would have to mention is Apricity. So she is a musician that I met during a live stream fundraiser performance organized by an organization called Star Power.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the same show together, and she is also independent, and she has a show for makes pop music. and she's been very supportive towards me. Like she hooked me up with at this incredible gig at an indie music festival, and she has a beautiful voice, and I really, really admire her. Another one is an artist that is based in Toronto but also Montreal. Her name is Melodica. Mm-hmm. She's also independent. She's an electropop artist. She does everything by herself. I think her biggest asset, honestly, is her music videos. She has so many of them, mm-hmm. and they're all just, they're all creative, and I don't know how she manages to just, you know, produce all of them. She's someone that I'm definitely looking up to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you released your debut album, Are There Any Rules, back in 2020. And that's a project with 9 songs on it. Can you describe some of the running themes throughout that project?
So Are There Any Rules is comprised of 9 songs. And if you listen to it from start to finish, it's really a journey from a point of naivety to one of clarity. So the first song in the album is called Runaway, and I wrote it while still in high school. I was in grade 12. And it was a very sort of vulnerable time in my life because I wasn't out and I had a crush on a classmate and I felt like we couldn't belong and I just wanted to run away. So, you know, the song was kind of naive in a way because I wasn't really accepting of myself, and I really thought that the only way that I could be happy in this world is if I would run away. And then, you know, as the album goes on, there's many events that sort of happen in my life. There's a song about depression. There's one about anxiety in a relationship. There's one about, you know, very dark and tragic chapters in my life, amongst which is the death of my dad, which is a song called He Is Watching. And then the album concludes with a song called There Was a Time, which I also released as a single. And that song is really about realizing that nothing in your life stays the same. Nothing is stagnant. Everything changes, including your attitude towards things. And so in that way, this album chronicles all of these life changes and big life events and tragedies and celebrations and failures and successes, but through the lens of going from a point of being very young and scared to a point of being more clairvoyant and more mature and more appreciative of everything that happens in your life, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, in a nutshell, that's what the album represents.
Mm-hmm. Back in.
Mm-hmm.
So why the title?
Why the title, Are There Any Rules?
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time thinking about it. Like what to name the album.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, Are There Any Rules is a line from one of the songs. There's a song in the album called Project X.
Mm-hmm.
And the song is, it's like a conversation between my current self and my younger self. Specifically, you know, my current, more out self, more, it's interesting. I was going to say more confident self, but that's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of questions that I would ask my younger self, and then the questions that my younger self would ask me.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what the song's about. So Are There Any Rules is a line from that song, and it's part of the verse that goes, am I seeking shelter? Can I be a shelter to someone else? Do I know the rules? Are there any rules? And that verse is about, you know, the younger me is asking the older me, like, am I able to be in a loving relationship with somebody? Because I obviously knew that I was gay since I was a very young kid, but I never could have fathomed that I would be able to be out and you know, engage in myself, you know, engage in who I was. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That I could be myself, in other words. And the Are There Any Rules lines is, you know, I'm saying, am I going to be able to conform to the rules of society? But then, are those rules, like, are they even real? So in a way, basically, this album is, you know, challenging my perception of what the rules of society are and whether they're real and whether we as people should conform to things that are aimed to the shakala. And I'm not talking about, like, I don't know, conspiracy theories or anti-government narrative. I'm really just talking about specifically, you know, being yourself no matter what your sexual orientation is.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite track on the album?
That's a tough question, because I'm very impressionable. Like, when one friend says that they love one song, then I'll believe them, and I'll be like, oh yeah, that's definitely the best song,
right,
and whatnot. And so, you know, in an effort to not try to please anyone, because if one of my friends would ask it, then I would sort of say the answer that would appease them.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm being completely, completely honest, it would have to be Project X, which is right smack down in the middle of the album. And I love it because it's sonically very different. It's a little darker.
Sure.
It has these, like, dark, mysterious, enigmatic undertones, and the way that I'm singing is very deliberate there. And again, it's the song that is a conversation between my older self, my current self, and my younger self, and I really, really get into it every time I listen to it. And I really hope it translates, but genuinely, yeah, I think it's the most unique song on that album. Yeah, Project X.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who did you work with to record and produce the project? Was it the same producer for Hero?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We worked on all the songs together, and we also actually worked with Eric Saint Laurent, who's a Toronto-based jazz guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
He's on two records in the album. He's on a song called Guilty, and There Was a Time, which is the last single from the album, the last song.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was this your first time in the studio?
In a recording studio?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. In fact, so as I mentioned before, I had written an 11-song soundtrack for a musical, for mm-hmm. an original musical, and we actually recorded these songs with Dima. That's actually how
cool.
I met him.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, so we recorded it with him, and I got to see how he works. And when I sort of arrived at that decision that I want to make an original album of my own music, I reached out to him. He was my first choice.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working together ever since.
Yeah. Was that an intimidating process to kind of put your first full-length album together?
Okay, honestly, that's such a good question, because
yeah.
it's embarrassing how intimidating it was. Because
yeah.
I graduate university in June of 2018,
mm-hmm.
and it's not until April of 2019 that I email him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, that's how long it took. And it's embarrassing, but, like, that's truly how scared I was to commit to this decision.
Yeah.
That, like, yes, I want to make music. Like, at the point where when I finished university, like, I had already written those songs for the musical. I had already sort of proven to myself that I love music and that I am good at writing it and good at performing it and all of that. But
mm-hmm.
it's the step to even just, like, email him and ask him, hey, you remember me? I recorded these songs, and, like, I have some of my own now. Like, do you have an availability? Like, that first email, like, that was such a, for some reason, that took so long for me to do.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your question, yes, it was very intimidating.
Yeah. No, it takes a lot of guts. I mean, I'm glad you did.
I'm so happy I did. Like, yes, like, I wish I would do it a little earlier, but whatever, you know, things happen when they need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, certainly if you're listening and you're scared, like, there's nothing to be scared of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just an email, of course. I'm also saying this to myself, unless I'm saying it to anyone else.
For sure, yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
Well, as I mentioned, I decided to sort of steer away from making albums, because, you know, as an independent artist, especially someone who's starting out, making an album is maybe not the wisest decision, unless
mm-hmm.
you have, like, a very solid fan base, which I definitely don't yet.
Mm-hmm.
So my approach right now is singles and music videos and photo shoots. And, you know, at this point, I'm happy to say that all of these creatives whose help I use to make all of these are, like, our friends. Like, I have the photographer that I use to make the cover art for Hero is now a friend. And the videographer who made the music video for Hero is now a friend. And obviously, my music producer is a friend. Like, he's almost family at this point. So it's like, as you go on and on, and I know this is a little off topic, but really, as an independent artist, you get to create a network of people that are like-minded and that will hopefully become friends.
Mm-hmm.
So what you can look forward to is just more projects like that, like Hero, you know, a single with a music video, with a photo shoot, and live performances, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's hard to say what the live music venue in Toronto is going to look like.
Yeah.
But I mean, I have, you know, I had a gig 3 days ago at the place called Three Times Cafe in downtown Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a gig tomorrow at a different place on Kensington Market. And it's sort of like, you know, it's picking up and it's coming back to life and it's very exciting.
Awesome.
And, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. And thanks so much for talking with me tonight. This is amazing. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And thank you for playing Hero.
Yeah, anytime. So you guys listening, you can find Jan on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Bandcamp, his website, and all streaming services as Jan Simon. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from Jan. There Was a Time is a single from 2020 about choosing to be yourself no matter what people think of you.
Hi guys, this is Jan Simon, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.
There was a time I wished for sunshine. There was a time I wished for snow. No matter how I tried to plan ahead, it never worked. 'Cause life has always a surprise in store for me. There was a time the future scared me. There was a time it seemed so grim, like I would not be able to walk down the street with him. Like nobody could ever understand the song within. Remember this on your mark. The world is not only light and dark, and the chase may not end. Time has passed and I've discovered better things to do. I've learned to laugh and found myself a world I never knew. Remember this on your mark. The world is not only light and dark, and the chase may not end. There was a time I wished for snow.